31. Destroy from within. The inner front strategy. A war can only really be fought against an enemy who shows himself by infiltrating your opponent's ranks, working from within to bring them down. You give them nothing to see or react against, the ultimate advantage. From within, you also learn their weaknesses and open up possibilities of sowing internal dissension, so hide your hostile intentions. To take something you want, do not fight those who have it, but rather join them, then either slowly make it your own or wait for the moment to stage a coup d'etat. No structure can stand for long when it rots from within. The Friendly Takeover. In the summer of 1929, André Breton, the 33-year-old leader of Paris's avant-garde surrealist movement, saw a private screening of a film called Un Chien Andalou. It was directed by a Spanish member of the group, Louis Buñuel, and its first image showed a man slicing open a woman's eye with a knife. This, Breton exclaimed, was the first surrealist film. Un Chien Andalou generated excitement in part because of the contribution to it of a new artist on the scene, Salvador Dali, a friend and collaborator of Buñuel's. The director spoke highly to Breton of his fellow Spaniard, whose paintings, he said, would certainly be considered surrealist, and whose personality was supremely peculiar. Soon others, too, were talking about Dali, discussing what he called his paranoid critical method of painting. He delved deep into his dreams and unconscious and interpreted the images he found there, no matter what their content, in delirious detail. Dali still lived in Spain, but Breton was suddenly seeing his name everywhere he went. Then, in November 1929, the 25-year-old Dali had his first major show in a Paris gallery, and Breton was transfixed by the images. He wrote of the exhibition, "For the first time, the windows of the mind had opened wide." The late 1920s were a difficult time for Breton. The movement he had founded some 5 years earlier was stagnating, its members constantly bickering over ideological points that bored Breton to tears. In truth, surrealism was on the verge of becoming passé. Perhaps Dali could offer the fresh blood it needed. His art, his ideas, and his provocative character might make surrealism something people talked about again. With all this in mind, Breton invited Dali into the movement, and the Spaniard happily accepted. Dali moved to Paris and established himself there. For the next few years, Breton's strategy seemed to be working. Dali's scandalous paintings were the talk of Paris. His exhibitions caused riots. Suddenly, everyone was interested in surrealism again, even younger artists. But by 1933, Breton was beginning to rue his inclusion of Dali. He had begun to get letters from the Spaniard expressing great interest in Hitler as a source of paranoid inspiration. Only the surrealists, Dali felt, were capable of saying pretty things on the subject of Hitler. He even wrote of sexually charged dreams about Hitler. As news of Dali's infatuation with the Führer spread within the movement, it provoked a great deal of argument. Many surrealists had communist sympathies and were disgusted by the Spanish artist's musings. To make matters worse, he included in one enormous painting an image of Lenin in a grotesque pose, exposing oversized buttocks 9 feet long, propped on a crutch. Many in the surrealist group admired Lenin. Was Dali being deliberately provocative? After Breton told Dali he disliked this rendition of the human buttocks and anus, a delirious profusion of anus images suddenly began to populate the artist's paintings. By early 1934, Breton could stand no more, and he issued a statement, co-signed by several members, proposing Dali's expulsion from the surrealist group. The movement was split down the middle. Dali had both supporters and enemies. Finally, a meeting was called to debate the issue. Dali had a fever and a sore throat, He came to the meeting wearing half a dozen layers of clothing and with a thermometer in his mouth. As Breton paced the room, listing the reasons for his banishment, Dali began to take off and put on his overcoat, jacket, and sweaters, trying to regulate his temperature. It was hard for anyone to pay attention to Breton. Finally, Dali was asked to respond. "I had painted both Lenin and Hitler on the basis of dreams," he said, the thermometer in his mouth making him spit many of his words. "Lenin's anamorphic buttock was not insulting, but the very proof of my fidelity to surrealism." He continued to put on and take off clothing. "All taboos are forbidden, or else a list has to be made of those to be observed. And let Breton formally state that the kingdom of surrealist poetry is nothing but a little domain used for the house arrest of those convicted felons placed under surveillance by the vice squad or the Communist Party." The members of the circle were perplexed, to say the least. Dali had turned their meeting into a kind of surrealist performance, both making fun of the creative freedom they advocated and claiming it for himself. He had also made them laugh. A vote to exclude him would only confirm the accusations he had leveled at them. For the time being, they decided to leave him alone. But in the meeting's aftermath, it was clear that the surrealist movement was now more divided than ever. At the end of that year, Dali disappeared to New York. Word came back to Paris that he had completely conquered the art world in America, making surrealism the hottest movement around. In the years to come, he would actually emigrate to the United States, and his face would grace the cover of Time magazine. From New York, his fame spread far, wide, and around the world. Meanwhile, the surrealists themselves faded quietly from public view, marginalized by other art movements. In 1939, Breton, disgusted by his lack of control over Dali, finally expelled the Spanish artist from the group. But by then, it hardly mattered. Dali himself had become synonymous with surrealism, and it would stay that way long after the surrealist movement had died.